This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
I'm Richard Bacon, and this is Fighting Talk's Any Other Business, where a panel of loose cannons are assembled to sound off about all the week's news. We had that especially written for us. Good evening and welcome to the show of Points for News-Based Punditry. Here's how it works. Each of the panellists has to win points from me by presenting the best possible arguments to the questions of the week. And let's define best. Not the most comprehensive, factual or necessarily correct answer. They'll be getting points for their passion, their flair and their verbal aggression. I am the judge and jury, but I'll tell you how you can put your point across in a moment. If I like what a panellist is saying, then they'll gain points and you'll hear this. And if I don't or detect waffle, then you'll hear this. It is as simple as that. Joining me on Any Other Business this week, first up, a writer and broadcaster who is no stranger to causing controversy right here at the BBC. He's a former editor of the Today programme. It is Rod Liddle. Rod, a little bit of applause for you and welcome.
That's a very small applause, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's certain dignity to
what's
it.
What's all that about?
But I am excited to see you. Are you feeling controversial tonight? Are you revved up?
No, I'm feeling dull and miserable. Does that help you with your programme?
It does not help me in anyway, I now wish we hadn't booked you. alongside Rod today, he co-founded The Art of Noise. He appeared in the ABC's video for The Luck of Love, but he's now better known, thankfully.
Did you? I did, and I broke my ankle.
Really?
They had an empty swimming pool. I leapt into it and I broke my ankle.
Better known as a writer and broadcaster, Paul Morley. Paul, have you done any Christmas shopping yet? Are you prepared?
No.
Right, fine. Oh, let me give you a little bit of applause as well. You'll see the applause is consistent. next up, joining us all the way from New York, where he's writing and appearing on my favourite show on television, the multi-award-winning Daily Show with Jon Stewart, it's John Oliver. Hello, John.
Hello, Richard.
Thank you for taking part. That's not right. Just some sort of flannel. I adore that programme.
Yeah, it's very good. Also, let me congratulate you on changing the sound effects so markedly from the sports version of Fighting Talk. This truly is a different programme.
Is it really? I'm not yet entirely familiar with my sound effects box. I wanted to give you an extra large round of applause because of how much I like your show and your work on there. Unfortunately, you're getting the same applause, but imagine it a bit bigger. Right. John Oliver is here. And we're also joined today by a comedian who even rattled the Church of England with his controversial musical, Jerry Springer, the opera. Stuart Lee joins us. Hello, Stuart.
Hello.
Are you looking forward to celebrating Christ's birthday in a week?
Yes, I am.
I imagine
How
you are.
How do you think of that? Also, I co-wrote that. It wasn't all my fault. And the Church of England, actually, were very supportive of it.
I don't necessarily
The Church of England never had any issues with it.
And who were the people that really had the issue then?
The far-right evangelicals, as a rule. The established churches.
People.
We got a great review in the Church of England's house newspaper, actually.
Really?
Yeah, they loved it.
Okay. Yes, but they'd give a good review to Satan, wouldn't they?
They would. They'd always look on the positive side.
Absolutely.
You can have a point for controversy already.
Really?
I'm rewarding that.
Okay, thanks.
So remember, that is what you hear for good punditry. Reminded you hear this if I don't like what they're saying. Right, let's get going. Here's our first topic. The Tories released a 975-page dossier this week listing 1,038 questions the government have failed to answer. Tell me what you suspect the answer is to a question that Tony Blair has sidestepped. And I'll start with Rod Liddle.
A question Tony Blair sidestepped.
Yeah.
Prime Minister, was it Sherry's good looks or likeable personality which first attracted you to her? What he does is not so much questions he's sidestepped. All politicians avoid questions. What he does is apologise for things for which he has no responsibility whatsoever. So, number one, he's apologised for the African slave trade, despite the fact that, the best to my knowledge, he doesn't have many African slaves in Downing Street. He's apologised... He may have a few. He apologised to the Guildford Four, though he didn't put them in prison himself. You know, he let them out, I think, in fact. What I think we should be asking is, what are the things which he hasn't apologised yet for, or which he should.
Do you have any ideas what they may be?
Obviously, you should apologise for Iraq, but, I mean, you may as well hold your breath. He's more likely to apologise for the great cataclysm which occurred in the Cretaceous and saw the removal of the dinosaurs from the planet than he is likely to apologise for Iraq. And, of course, Iraq is something for which he's responsible and for which he sent British servicemen to their deaths and killed many, many Iraqis, and which he said is a disaster. But does he mind? No, I thought it was all right. Actually,
thank you, Rod. That's a good start. That's a handsome three-pointer, if I may say so,
thanks,
as well.
Mate.
Let's cross to New York next. John Oliver, a question that Tony Blair has sidestepped.
Well, Rod suggested that we could hold our breath for an apology, and we haven't actually tried that as a nation yet, that childish technique of just holding breath and demanding it. But also, Tony Blair isn't so much king of the sidestep in terms of question dodging as the step over. He's the Ronaldinho of party politics, to the extent that his greatest legacy, I think, really could be to somehow patent his form of question evasion, so that every time a future politician sidesteps an important issue, they have to give him £50. My favourite response to a question, he was asked a question about the extent of benefit fraud, and I think this is right. I think he responded with, "Oh, look, a swan. Just behind you. It's just over your head. I think you've missed it. Bye."
John, storming into the lead there, but there's only two of you have gone so far. Let's try Paul Morley next. Paul.
I'm blaming him for the cricket at the moment. I think you can find a tie-in between the... about 5 a.m. when it all goes horribly wrong, I think you can step that back to it being Tony Blair's fault. The questions that I wanted to ask, but what I want to see him do, I want to see him go on the Food Channel with Jenny Bartlett. I don't know if you ever watched that.
Oh, I've watched it a lot.
10 a.m. in the morning, Tony Blair on there, being asked questions.
It's a great
being asked, being asked those kind of questions and seeing him sidestep those, that's what I'm particularly in the mood on. The question I particularly want to ask him, if I get that into that position, is what ultimately he really thought of Britpop, and has that shrivelled up now? Is he ultimately terribly embarrassed about that?
The whole thing will be when Noel Gallagher came around his house.
Yeah, when he got excited about the whole idea and he became groupies for those kind of people. I want to see him now backtrack on that and realise he made a mistake and actually, admit that he really listens to the Tom Waits triple album, really.
He even alluded to drug use when he met Noel Gallagher as well, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, in a way, I think that drug use is probably what contributes to the fabulous way he can sidestep a question, which I personally think is genius, and I think it's been his greatest contribution to the English language.
Thank you, Paul. A very strong start so far, generally. Stuart Lee.
I'd like to ask Blair why his face is becoming smaller and his voice is becoming higher. And the reason why his face is becoming smaller and his voice is becoming higher is because he has to screw up his face because he's lying all the time. He hasn't got confidence to have a full-size face. And his voice has to get higher because he's like a child in denial about something wrong that they've done. So I think that is the key to it. And I think if you could just nail him on that, everything else would unravel. And John was talking about how he should patent his question evasion method. And I think you probably need to give that question evasion method a name. And it should be a Blair, right? And that could be a new noun for just avoiding the question. So why is his face becoming smaller and his voice becoming higher? And that is a general thing that would be a catch-all answer to everything.
That's good. If he painted it, he could make a load of money, maybe pay for that expensive house that he's bought in Connaught Square. Thank you very much. Let's have a look at the scores at the end of the first round there. Trailing is Rod Little on 3, followed jointly by Paul Morley and Stuart Lee on 4, out in the lead in New York with 5 is John Oliver. Now, folks out there, is your opportunity to make a point. Do you agree with my scoring? Let me know what you think. Scores will be adjusted.
No, of course I don't.
I'm talking to the listeners, Rod, not the guests. If you make a really good point, I will adjust the scoring based on your text. So please text me on this number. 85058. Oh, the drama. Or you can email.
Is that the sound of email?
It's dramatic email. It's a category of email.
On Radio 4, things like this for scoring, what happens is you would hand over to a lady with a received pronunciation voice, but you haven't got. You've got a bold man.
We don't play by the rules.
Okay, right.
But the lady with the received pronunciation voice would do it properly.
Yeah.
All right. Because it's Radio 4.
I'm sensing a slight mutiny one round in. All right. So we'll come back to that later on. Here's our next question. Thatcher's old tea guest Pinochet finally popped his jack boots last week, which got me wondering, who else should Britain feel ashamed for making feel welcome? And this time I'll start with Paul Morley.
I'm very worried about David Guest at the moment because I think he's been put out there as a sort of someone to prepare the way for Michael Jackson and various other people to enter these reality shows to repair their whole lives. And, whatever they did in the war, where they send the person over, first of all, to get shot, he's that person that's been chosen by those kind of people to see if it's actually going to repair their reputation. And the way that he's inveigled us to believe that actually he's quite nice... You know, that moment when everyone started to say, I quite like David Guest, he's looking really good.
Yeah.
That started to really make me panic.
Okay.
So at the moment, I'm a bit worried about David Guest.
OK, thank you. Rod Little?
Oh, there's too many, aren't there? I mean, Patricia Hewitt, for a start. I'm sure she's Australian. But even more than that, Ronaldo, obviously. I mean, he simply shouldn't be here. In those days after the World Cup defeat to Portugal, I actually ruined my editing profile on Wikipedia by going in and altering throughout every line Ronaldo's biography.
It's great fun doing that on Wikipedia.
It is wonderful fun, and it stayed up for 2 days, so I was very proud about that.
And that's exciting, seeing how long your adjustment remains online for.
It can stay for ages. Sheikh Omar Bakri Mohammed. Now, we've actually kicked him out. We've said he can't come back, but he spent a few months in Lebanon and then asked to come back again. And there he was, right up against the Israeli front line. He should have been having the field day, but no such luck.
Thank you, Rod. Stuart Lee, who else should Britain feel ashamed for making welcome?
We should not have been the last international refuge of Madonna.
That's very true.
The child thief going around the world with her outrageous religious iconography.
Are we allowed to argue with these points?
Why not? Has that angered you, Paul?
Oh, it's made me furious.
What, was it the word thief?
No, it's the word Madonna.
Yes.
But I also think that the state we're at the moment in the decline of the empire, the subsiding of nature of that whole beast, we need people like Madonna to actually give us a bit of a worldwide profile. So I'm not so worried about the introduction of Madonna.
Let's finish his point, Stuart.
But before he met Madonna, Guy Ritchie could have been a British film director to put us on a level with Scorsese, you know. But something happened. Something happened. Like, she sucked power out of him, like some kind of succubus or harpy, and we can't allow her to do that.
Are you somehow insinuating that Swept Away and Revolver weren't very good?
I am. Yeah. Whereas the first one he did,
Lock, Stock,
and Two Smoking Barrels was at least as good as an exceptional Smirnoff advert.
I was about to say the old school Sazy comparison was strange.
All right, let's go. John Oliver.
I'm less concerned about the people we welcome into Britain as those who we allow to leave, the Friday night hooligan street vomiters who require a holiday and deface the name of Great Britain. And I think we're told as children that if we go somewhere, we are ambassadors for where we've just come from. And we should treat British holidaymakers as true ambassadors, give them full ambassadorial duties, meet them with a motorcade at the airport. Let's see if they're quite so happy to get into fights if they've got a full timetable of opening a sewage plant and sitting through 2 hours of children from the local school performing incomprehensible local dancing.
John, would you go as far as giving them hats with feathers in?
I would do that. I would go that far. I care that much about it.
Okay.
Full ambassadorial duties, and that has always involved feathers and hats.
Of course it has, if I may say so, an excellent suggestion. Let's have a look at the scores at the end of the second round. Stuart Lee is losing at the moment on 6. Paul Morley and Rod Little jointly have 7. Out in the lead still in New York on 9 is John Oliver. Our next question is all about this.
I suffer with asthma, and my husband suffers with his chest as well. Cost of living's much cheaper here. The weather's great.
Much more friendly atmosphere, much more social lifestyle.
Well, this certainly relates to the point that John Oliver was making a moment ago. According to research released by the Institute for Public Policy Research this week, 1 in 10 British nationals now live abroad, with the most popular destinations being, in order, Australia, Spain, USA, Canada, Ireland, New Zealand, South Africa, France, Germany and Cyprus. So, which of these would you least like to spend out your natural days in? And we'll start with Stuart Lee.
Which of those do I least? I think Canada, actually, having been there. That's an incredibly
tedious
place. Yeah, and they know it as well. They know it was why they invite us there to try and liven it up.
But doesn't that endear you to them a little bit? The fact that they know it's a good...
No, it doesn't. No, they should be ashamed. I think the real worry for me is these immigrants. People moaning about immigrants coming in. I think immigrants is the problem. People taking their money and skills away from Britain, and they should be penalised for it. As should you, John Oliver, in New York.
Yeah,
taking your money and skills away.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
we had need of you here, and you have gone and left us.
Well, you say that, Stuart, but the rest of the British media would disagree with you.
John, we might as well come to you next on this.
I would probably least likely to spend my natural days in New Zealand. By all accounts, there's a very high standard of living over there, beautiful scenery, and this late in the day, As a Briton, I'm simply not equipped to deal with that level of positivity. We in Britain thrive upon negativity, and, well, in fact, when you do stand-up, and Stuart can verify this, anywhere you go in Britain, you ask, what's it like here? People will say, it's terrible, but with a real pride in their voice. And so I'm not cut out for
New Zealand. They do that, John, everywhere except... everywhere you do stand-up in Britain, you can make a joke about how rubbish the town is at the beginning of the night, and everyone laughs. But if you do it in Birmingham, they look genuinely angry because they know, secretly, and you've called their bluff.
So that's a Church of England and Birmingham.
Rod Little.
Oh, Africa, without a doubt. No, not really the Africans that's a problem. It's just, you know, you sit there minding your own business in the middle of the savannah and suddenly Bono and Bob Geldof turn up, pester you into changing your country, or then Madonna nicks your kids. You know, a few miles away, there's another couple, you know, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie hiring an entire African country to get married. You've just got to stay away from it, mate.
No one's safe over there anymore.
No one's safer. No one's safe.
OK, thank you. And Paul Morley.
Australia.
The whole of Australia.
The whole of Australia, everything about it, because I get the feeling if I get off the plane... People keep saying, go to Australia, it's fantastic. I get the feeling if I get off the plane, and I've realised I've wasted all of my life by not being there. So I'm slightly concerned about that. And also what's interesting, when you hear talk radio in Australia, even though they seem to live in a kind of paradise, they still spend all their time moaning. You know, it's a weird swap that goes on when you listen to talk radio here, and then they go over to Australia and they win in the Ashes, they've got the sun, they've got all of that going, they've got neighbours at least four times a day, and they're still moaning. So I would be very, very worried about living in Australia.
But you're also implying that you would like it, essentially, if you got there.
That's what I find in life, that when someone says that they don't want to do something or they don't like something, what they're actually meaning is that they mean the opposite.
I've just been to a place where I really wouldn't want to live. I went on my honeymoon last week to the Shetland Islands.
Islands. Well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And congratulations on a bold choice of honeymoon destination.
But it was a mistake.
Lucky lady.
Like, it was her idea, but you can't do 10 days. In the Shetland Islands in December. No,
has that already caused a little bit of friction in the marriage?
That's all right.
But you're annoyed at the Shetland Islands for your honeymoon.
It gets dark at 2:30 and light at 11 in the morning, and then there's a really problematic 4 hours between kind of 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock when the two restaurants or three pubs in the whole island open. On the last day, we drove about 70 miles to look at a bus shelter on the island of Unst, which is an unusual bus shelter because it's been decorated.
Was it worth it? Did it live up to expectations?
In London, you would have dismissed it out of hand, but on the Shetlands, it was of a major point of interest. So, you know.
How the hell did she talk you into it in the first place? I don't understand.
Well, she wanted to go to the... I've been to the Orkneys, which is like fairyland, and I thought it might be like that, but it was a bit like... It was a bit like a working men's club on a pile of mud in the middle of the sea, really.
Even though it doesn't strictly relate to the format, you might as well have a point choice of Shetland Islands as a honeymoon destination.
And maybe next time, if there is a next time, take it to Rockall. That's really nice.
Here's your scores. Paul Morley's last at the moment on 9, Stuart Lee on 10, Rod Little on 11. Out in the lead still is John Oliver. And we're going to do a quick question now, and it's about this.
We wanted to have this big concert with, you know, full of energy, full of... sort of fun and happiness, which I knew she would have wanted. And on her birthday as well, it's got to be the best birthday present she's ever had.
Diana has been all over a reaction already from Rod. Diana's been all over the news this week, the Stevens report and the announcement of a concert at Wembley in her memory. So it seems appropriate at this point to ask who in Britain comes closest to being considered our new Diana. John Oliver.
Natasha Kaplinsky. She ticks all the necessary Diana boxes. She's been groomed.
Well, no, I think that's a fair point. John, is that where that ends?
That's right. That silence was a verbal full stop.
Okay. That's how it works in audio terms.
Sinister enough, though, isn't it? It's a sinister enough thought.
Paul Morley, who's the new Diana?
Well, what she's been groomed for, Kaplinsky, is not actually to be the new Diana, but is to present the programme that's coming up next year, which is the search for the new Diana. Which is the replacement for what are you going to do with a problem like Maria?
Oh, that's a great idea.
We are finding who is the new Diana.
And what would the audition involve, though, Paul?
Well, how to sit on a tube train without showing your knickers is a vital one, I think, because she was very good at that.
Very elegant.
I'm resisting all the time the opportunities to be a judge on any of these panels, but this one I've absolutely said I will be a judge on this panel, because next to me will be Peter and Katie, and they have to be together, because also they are very, very close to possibly being the new Diana. So Pete and Andre together will be next to me on the panel. So I think how we find out who the new Diana is through this particular show. Early runners to appear on it... include Angela Lansbury, which I think is really important because in America she'll get a huge vote. So Angela Lansbury's looking good.
And it's important, our reputation in America, very important.
Yep, all the girls allowed are on it.
Well, even Nadine?
All the girls allowed are on it. All the girls allowed are on it, especially the one from Stockport, who I've got my early money on.
Not the red-haired one?
No, the blonde-haired one.
Thank you. I'm giving you a point for coming up with possibly the best new television format I've heard for a long time. Rod Little.
The new Diana?
Yeah.
Pingu the Penguin? SpongeBob SquarePants? Either of those two would be an intellectual step up from the last one. None of which is Diana's fault, of course. It's not our fault. It's not her fault that we've had this appalling fixation on the woman. It's
what do you mean,
fault
our fault? Who's us?
Well, I mean, it's not your fault, is it, Paul? I mean, I wouldn't blame you, but I mean, generally, it's the British public that has fixated itself upon
Crazy British public, who also fixated on that whole conspiracy nonsense as well.
Yeah, well, I don't know if they did, actually. That was just Mohammed Al-Fayed and the Daily Express. I don't think anyone else took it seriously for a second, apart from John Nettles, maybe.
I meet a lot of perfectly rational people who are otherwise intelligent who still believe it was a conspiracy.
Yeah, but we need those kind of conspiracies, though. You know, we don't have enough of those conspiracies in this country. And I think we should generate a few of those myths.
The Daily Express certainly needs them.
On the websites, of course, the Middle Eastern websites, everyone in the Middle East, everyone, you sort of draw a line at Greece, and everyone to the east of there thinks that Prince Philip knocked her off because she was with an Egyptian.
Did you see the conspiracy theory? It's mental. The one that genuinely existed, saying that she was knocked off because she uncovered the fact that the royal family were a race of alien lizards from another planet, genuinely, who were eating babies.
That's the David.
I didn't know that. You can have a point for bringing it to my attention.
Yes. Great.
Stuart, you're the last one to go on this round. Who's the new Diana?
Rod's just proved how problematic it is. I mean, he suggested SpongeBob SquarePants, but there are scandals attached to everyone. Of course, in America, the evangelical right are campaigning against SpongeBob SquarePants on the grounds that he's gay. Were you aware of that? he is apparently a bad example to children because he's a gay sponge.
Really?
He's a gay sponge.
I'm afraid we're discounting him from Paul from the audition process. He's gone.
He's the worst kind of sponge.
I don't know, when it says that should be a concert in her memory, it's what she would have wanted. Obviously, that's inaccurate. What she would have wanted would be to have not been killed in a tunnel in a car crash. But then, and who's the new Princess Diana? I think Leona from X Factor, right? Mm. Already, she's won the hearts and minds of the public. She's the princess, the queen of British hearts. But she's going to have to have some terrible tragic things happen to her in order to be able to really
I mean, that's a short-termist solution. She's only got 3 months before people have forgotten
it. It is also very difficult to answer the question in a way, because by the very nature of answering the question, you say that she wants to be killed.
Yeah.
Now, after seeing last night's show, then absolutely, I would agree that we're in that area. But that's the problem with answering that question.
Let's have a look at the scores. Oh, no, I'm going to do the scores, Rod. Here we go. We're in last place at the moment. Oh, it's turned around. John Oliver and Stuart Lee joining on 13. Rod Little on 14. Out in the lead now. Paul Morley with 15. Here's our next question. Apparently, during his speech to the Party of European Socialist Conference in Portugal, one of John Prescott's front teeth fell out. So, we know what he wants for Christmas, but what would be a suitable gift for other politicians? John Oliver.
Well, first of all, Prescott should in fact be commended for this act. He only had 5 minutes to deliver a talk on climate change, which is ridiculous. So instead, he clearly decided to try and get his message across through the medium of metaphorical mime. Like the planet, John Prescott's body has been terribly polluted over the years to the point at which it is indeed falling apart. And his false tooth falling stands as a powerful metaphor for the destruction of the environment. Many left that speech with a new perspective on the problem. He should not be mocked. He's a hero. Now, on the other hand, to answer your question, I would give Jeff Hoon a pair of mirrored sunglasses, the only difference being that the mirrors would be on the inside, forcing him to look himself in the eyes whenever giving an answer to an Iraqi inquiry.
That's great.
Very good.
Oh, that's right. I was thoroughly enjoying that. You can have an extra point, even though you're not speaking at the moment. Let's have Stuart Lee, please.
I'd like to give John Prescott one of those toys he had when I was a kid, which was robots that boxed each other. You remember that?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think he needs to work out a lot of aggression.
Can you really work out your aggression through those toys?
You can, but not by using them to box each other. You just have to smash them to bits with a hammer.
Oh, yeah.
Also, I think all politicians should be given socks, oranges and pants so they know what it's like for everyone else, or follow Gordon Brown's example and all be given copies of the Arctic Monkeys album. I think they should be made to actually listen to the albums they pretend to like in order to appear normal. That should be their Christmas present.
That's great. That was such a tremendous comment by Gordon Brown. He also implied they listen to them in the morning as well.
Yeah, get him up and going for the day. You know, in the evening, chill out. Something like Massive Attack.
Let's go to Rod Little, please.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I've been agonising about poor Patch Hewitt and what one should get her for Christmas for the last week, and I just cannot think of anything apart from the thing which clearly she needs, which, I hate to say it, is a shag. But I'm certainly not myself going to offer to do it, and I can think of only one other person within the cabinet who probably would.
One offer if it's for the greater good.
I, even if it was for the greater good, I mean, sod the benefit of the country or indeed Patch Hewitt, I just don't think I could bring myself to do it.
It's a very, very selfish perspective.
I would, if I did do it, have a post-coital cigarette, the fascist woman. there will soon be no chance for me to have a post-coital or any other sort of cigarette anywhere in the land. Other than that, I don't know, something spiteful, I suppose, for Peter Mandelson, one of those large leg traps you get in Canada for catching elk and wildebeest.
Okay, I've given you a point purely for passion. Doesn't indicate unnecessarily.
Except
agree with your suggestion.
There are no wildebeest in Canada.
I've taken it away for reasons of accuracy. Paul Morley, your last on this round. Suitable gift for other politicians.
I think all politicians should have their portrait painted by Jake and Dinos Chapman. Their exhibition in Liverpool at the moment, they've got this wonderful area where, as in fact, a few art critics did it, where you could pay them £4,500 and they'd paint your portrait. So it's quite a good gift. And what's fascinating about that gift is that the way they paint your portrait, it really... they don't give you the flattery, they give you the truth. And it is a wonderful way of isolating the ugliness of the politician. So all politicians to be painted by Jake and Dinos Chapman. Thinking... Wow, £4,500, that instantly becomes £30,000. But of course, in that case, it will probably reduce very instantly to about £100.
That's like Oliver. You know, Oliver Cromwell famously asked for his portrait to be painted as ugly as he
could. As ugly as he could, yeah.
Watson.
I think it's actually much more exciting to see it that way.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about the portraits that Chapman did, whoever they did, it tended to look like Prescott anyway.
Okay. Stuart, you can have an extra point just for saying something interesting. Here's our scores. The halfway point. Jointly, last place, Paul Morley, Rod Little on 17, Stuart Lee on 18. And out in the lead, joining us from New York, The Daily Show's John Oliver. It's 7:31. We'll continue this after the news here on 5 Live. I'm Richard Bacon, and welcome back to Fighting Talk's Any Other Business on 5 Live, where our panel is chewing up and spitting out all the burning issues of the week. I was just wondering, Stuart Lee, what Jesus Christ would be like if you put him into bat.
I don't know enough about cricket to answer that question.
No, nor do I, so I couldn't answer it either, but it's certainly an interesting concept.
It is an interesting concept, yeah, a religious icon's playing sport, and doubtless in 10 or 15 years' time that will be a television format as well.
Apparently Allah was quite good.
I think so, yeah.
I think probably Monty Python did it years ago. Let's have a look at the scores at the moment then, as they stand on Fighting Talk's Any Other Business. Last, Rod Little and Paul Morley on 17, followed by Stuart Lee on 18. Out in the lead in New York is John Oliver. A reminder of the rules: if you hear this, I'm giving points, and if you hear this, I am taking them away. And the two panellists with the highest scores at the end of the show will go head-to-head to defend the indefensible and determine who takes home the winner's crown. And if you want your say on the show, then you can. A couple of people have emailed or texted, including David Lewis. Stuart, he wants you to have three extra points. He says, I come from Shetland, and you're right, Stuart. He goes, and you're right, it's crap.
No, it wasn't crap. It was just that the things that are there, which are some folk music and a couple of prehistoric sites, that the Shetland Tourist Board has to massively over-exaggerate their importance.
The bus shelter.
Yeah.
If you've just joined us, for some extraordinary reason, Stuart Lee went on his honeymoon last week to the Shetlands.
It's a good bus shelter.
Yeah.
it's not worth two ferry journeys.
I'm giving you 2 points. That was from David, who says, now studying in Aberdeen to get away from Shetland.
Yeah, and that's how far they go.
Aberdeen has a step up.
Is there time for me to just ask one or two quick personal questions to John Oliver in New York? Because I know him, and this is much cheaper than phoning him. Are you all right out there?
I'm fine. How are you?
Stuart, be quick.
Is your income higher than your living expenses?
No, it isn't. No. I'm making a loss week on week.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, look at the smile on his face. Competitive nature of comics there.
I'm glad he got there. I was up for that same job, and I told the woman, I said, I'm rubbish, you should see John Oliver. So that's...
I auditioned for that job as well. I was not right. Let's carry on and move on to our next topic. And the government this week axed a TV ad that revealed cigarettes contain polonium-210 on the basis that it might hurt the feelings of the family of Alexander Litvinenko. What current TV ad would you like to see the government axe on the basis that it's just bloody annoying? I will start with Rod Little.
We can start off with that stupid man on the AA advert who says, you just call out my name. Well, I don't know what your bloody name is, do I? I'm not going to call it out. Is it Bob or Dermot or any advert for feminine hygiene products, especially those with specially absorbent flaps at the side? Yeah. I just really don't like that. You might also say anyone who advertises a car by using a French footballer to make us think that the car is bloody sophisticated... When we all know that if a car was like a French footballer, you'd be driving along, another car comes along, your car would dive into a ditch and roll over three times. And that dog that says, oh, yes. I mean, that's a cyanide injection. That
painful.
Is.
Thank you very much, Rod.
Oh, and one more. Oh, yes. There's one more. That bloody woman who, for the Marks and Spencers advert, who has an orgasm over scallops. It's not on. It's not decent.
I've not seen it. As a concept, I don't like it. You can have a point. Paul Morley.
Actually, the Marks and Spencer advert, Shirley Bassey sings the Pink song, and that line where she goes, do you know what I mean? Gerla does all the sniffing in the Surf ad, particularly annoying. Yeah. Davina in the Nutrice ad. And then...
The one where she brings her mum?
All the Greys. Anna Friel in the ad where she goes, a little lighter, a little brighter. PC World, sounds great, but I'm on a tight budget. The McDonald's pantomime ad at the moment, you know, it's behind you, which is done with a kind of weird, elegant simplicity, as if to suggest somehow that McDonald's actually is a good thing. And even though they should be slapping us in the face with their vulgarity, actually, even when they do panto, somehow it's done in a really elegant, symbolic way. That annoys me.
Thank you. Complete?
No.
Oh, my God, no.
The Vicks First Defence hand foam ad, you know, where they do that weird shaking of the hand in the lift.
Course.
And you're thinking, hang on a minute, if you didn't get the promotion, why is your product any damn good?
Thank you. Stuart Lee.
Well, the advert I really hate, which is sort of symptomatic of adverts that annoy me generally, is the mini ads where the whole tone of it and the bloke's voice and the way it's written is completely copied off everything Chris Morris has ever done, but with no kind of sense that it's in some way immoral to steal a whole man's genre to promote a car. And if I have a BMW Mini, and they send you these stupid updates all the time asking you to go on like Days Out in the Mini Club, and I went, I have no intention of doing that and will never buy another one of your cars because you ripped off all this stuff. And I don't understand the whole thing about advertising just being theft. And the best example of this is about 10 years ago when there was, I think it was some Volkswagen adverts, but they ripped off that Brit artist who did the installation where she held up signs with words written on them saying happy, sad, whatever like that. And although they couldn't be sued for it, they said we didn't copy it, but the job of advertising is to bring ideas from the fringe towards the mainstream, which is a bit like in Billy Bunter comic in books when he says, I didn't steal your cake, Jenkins, in any way, it was delicious, right? It's kind of like that bit of like, and that's just such a totally corrupt, wasteful, bent industry. And I also hate the fact that things you have like an emotional response to, like Nick Drake records and Sonic songs, get used in adverts, and then forever you associate them with wheels spinning round or food, and I hate all that.
This is the most passionate topic with you tonight.
Because inside 90 seconds in an ad break, everything you hate about modern life is revealed.
Is there, encapsulated in the thing. Yeah. John Oliver, an American take on this, ads that are annoying you.
Well, yeah, I've missed, obviously, lots of British adverts. As we've established, I'm out here making a financial loss week on week. And, in fact, the Inland Revenue can expect to hear from me on that matter pretty soon. But there is one, as many adverts over here that are, you know, pretty unpleasant, but there's one in particular at the moment, advertising Time Warner Cable, where an actor, I presume that's what he is, a biscaffed actor, sings a cappella at the top of his face about the virtues of Time Warner Cable to the tune of Jingle Bells. And I don't know this man, and I know he's an actor, and I don't know his circumstances. I'm sure he's going to use the money for good rather than evil, but I feel a venomous loathing for him that can only be sated by bloodlust.
Most of your writing team on the day-to-day, on the Daily Show out there, are involved in advertising major American computer firms, aren't they? John Hodgman's doing Apple, and Dimitri Martin's doing Microsoft.
He's doing the other one, yeah, Microsoft.
So they satirise corporate America by day and take the money for advertising it by night.
All right, Stuart, let it go. You didn't get the job. Move on.
And I'd like to thank the people at Commodore 64 for helping me through my lean times out here.
All right, let's have a look at the scores there. That round, here we go. In last place, Stuart Lee on 22. Then we have Paul Morley on... John Oliver on 24, Paul Morley 25, and out in the lead, Rod Liddell on 26. No one said the Iceland ads, which surprised me. Our next topic is about this. They just annoyed me.
Can I tell you what I particularly like? I do like the way George Clooney at the end on the island just lifts up his glass. Have you seen that one for the martini?
No, I'm talking
at the
about...
End.
I went to Iceland, the country, for my 30th birthday.
Did you?
It's much better than
Shetland. We're finding out a lot about your holiday destinations tonight.
Broadly similar.
I imagine it is. Yeah. Our next topic is about this.
Anti-terrorism officers have launched an investigation into the death of the former Russian intelligence agent Alexander Litvinenko.
So if they're not whacking dissidents with nuclear sushi, they're playing strong arm with the likes of BP and Shell and muscling them off the gas fields. How frightened should we be of Russia? Rod Liddell.
Well, I rather like Russia, and I'm rather comforted to find that Russia is back in the frame as an enemy, because
I know what you mean.
It's nice to have a proper country where the soldiers have got snow on their boots. It's the sort of place that Stuart would go on a honeymoon, probably. Yeah. And, you know, decent nuclear weapons, none of your dirty bomb stuff. At least you know where you are with the Russians.
Mm. It's also a proper enemy.
It's a proper enemy, you know, and we can relate to it. We know what they're like. They're dour, miserable, and all that sort of thing. And, of course, they're over here. There are no Russians left in Russia. They're all over here with their isotopes.
OK, thank you. John Oliver.
That's a hell of a geographical claim from Rod Liddell, that Russia is, in fact, empty at the moment. But it's a great idea to be frightened of Russia. We should be terrified of nations, indeed, rather than against more complex, abstract concepts such as terror. And, in fact, we need to return to the halcyon days of the 1960s when we thought we knew who the enemy was. It was tangible. That was a golden age in hindsight, but we shouldn't stop. Let's go back to the great enemies. Let's start fearing Rome and the Vikings, because they were really good enemies. Really, really
proper
good enemies.
Proper old school enemies.
Yeah.
And the Welsh.
The Welsh.
Let's not go there. Paul Morley.
I'm going to join in with the general consensus that we should reconstitute the idea of Russia, as indeed the Soviet Union. They should bring back all those countries that we've had trouble working out who they are, and the idea that the blackness behind that Iron Curtain was so overwhelming that when we mean Russia now, we mean a little thing. I want it to be that big thing again that's got hundreds of countries associated with it. We don't know who they are.
I think
we've had problems with all the Bond movies recently because there is no specific place that we have. You know, they've got to go off weird, vague terrorism and weird, vague kind of people that we don't
know. It's a bit of a stroke look for the new Bond film that all of this is happening at the moment, I think, in a way.
Yeah, but...
It's been made up.
I just like the idea of that enemy in that place, in that position.
Okay, very quickly. Stuart Lee.
I don't like the new breed of Russian spy. They seem like just boring grey men moving through cities. I'd like to return to the 60s when they were women in kind of fur knickers named after slang for genitalia. That was good. But I think the main thing we have to fear from Russia is, and this is a genuine thing, is that Putin's not participating in global warming discussions, because it means that global warming is freezing up the Arctic tundra in Russia, which means they'll be able to grow loads of food on it, which they couldn't do previously, and yet at the same time it's releasing gases which will poison the rest of the world. So he's going to have vegetables while we're choking, and that is a long-term Russian strategy to be the last country left standing, I reckon. That's the genuine thing we should fear.
All right, you can have an extra one now.
I tell you, the other thing that we were beginning to fear a few years ago was Russian pop groups. And with Tattoo, I was slightly worried that would lead to...
But that moment passed, Paul, thankfully. Yeah. We moved on from that.
Just an agony that I wanted to represent.
OK, our next question is about this.
Well, what a year it's been for you. Congratulations on the tour. Congratulations on your lovely little black baby, David. Are you stopping there, or are you going to get more? Because I went to Africa, all I came back with was a wallet.
Right, I want to stress, this is a one-word answer panel. Just very quickly, it was the British Comedy Awards this week, but which non-entertainers deserve a gong for making you laugh? Stuart Lee.
The snake in the British Comedy Awards for revealing what a waste of time the whole thing was.
Rod Liddell.
Lenny Henry.
Paul Morley.
The Guardian.
And I don't know, it makes you laugh.
In a sad, poignant way, yes.
John Oliver.
There's a group of heroin addicts currently in San Francisco taking out a court case against a woman who's attempting to gentrify their area.
Have two. Let's have a look at the scores then at the moment. In last place, Stuart Lee on 26, followed by Paul Morley, 27, Rod Liddell on 29, and out in the lead, partly because of that intervention there, is John Oliver on 31. It's a 7.46 here on Five Live. Let's have a quick look at the travel with Nick Duncan.
Nick Duncan, Five Live Match Day Travel.
All right, there's an email here from Jules in Birmingham. The programme's great, but why don't you award points to the guy who reads the travel news? He's brilliant. Nick, I'm afraid I'd love to do that. It's sadly not part of the format.
That's taking too much.
Can I have half?
It is. Sorry?
Can I have half a point?
No. Look at him, he looks crestfallen as he leaves the room. It's still nice to get a positive email.
Yes, it's going all right. It's the first time you've done this, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
If I were a critic and I were reviewing this, I'd say it's like grumpy old men on amphetamine.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
But is that a positive review? I'm not sure from that comment, Stuart.
It is, yeah.
I hope so. Thank you. Right, let's go on to our next question. The world's first hand transplant was performed this week in Sweden on a 47-year-old woman known only as Alba. This has got me wondering, if you lost a hand and could have anyone's to replace it, whose would you choose? John Oliver.
I would choose the hand of God. Not, again, the abstract hand of God who may or may not exist, but the hand of God from the roof of the Sistine Chapel. That is a conversation piece at any awkward conversation dinner party.
It certainly is. What do you mean? Because it would be there with you on your arm?
Well, you'd have some masonry beautifully painted on one side attached to your arm.
Yeah.
You know, what's that, people would ask, and then you're away into the anecdote and, you know, conversations will spiral off that.
That's true, because often at the start of a dinner party, it's a bit awkward, and you're right,
it wouldn't be if you had a piece of the Sistine Chapel on the end of your arm, Richard. It would be a lot. I'm not an easy socialiser, but I think that would help break the ice.
I suspect you're right. Stuart Lee.
I would like to have my hand replaced with the hand of the former All Creatures Great and Small star Christopher Timothy.
No, what's the reason for that? No, because it's been, but it never really went there, though.
I'm not prepared to go into any...
I see where you're going.
I think that's enough. We can close the gap and move on.
You can certainly have a point for that. Rod Liddell.
Both hands of Sheikh Abu Hamza al-Masri, the hook-handed cleric who is now in Belmarsh prison.
Do you mean his original hands or his hooks?
I want his original hands.
They don't exist anymore, Rod.
Well, yeah, but this is obviously a hypothetical. He is,
is
not going to have Christopher
literal?
Timothy's hand, is he? And I would say to the Sheikh, I say, look, don't mess around with landmines, mate. This is what it gets you. I would taunt him with them.
Do you think he's not learned that lesson?
I don't think he has. He's perfectly wandering around, not my fault, give us another hook. You know,
But he lost his hands, didn't he, when he was...
When we were funding him, yes.
And we were funding them to fight the Russians. So,
yes.
In a way, his hands are our loss, right? And so... We should lament those hands were doing British work.
But then those hands turned.
They turned against us. They came over here and he turned against us. It's a disgrace.
I've seen them go to the toilet, by the way.
I'm not bizarre. Don't care. Don't want to know. Paul Morley.
Yeah, a couple of musical answers, actually. First of all, DJ Shadow's Jackass cheerleader sidekick, Latif the Truth Speaker, when he does that wonderful thing that they do with their finger, you know, which I spent all last night at Brixton Academy trying to copy. But on a more romantic level, the hands of the New York jazz drummer Paul Motian, because I just love the idea of spending the rest of my life just sat behind the traps, just being able to do that little thing with the brushes. That would be bliss for me.
I don't really know who you're talking about, but you can have...
OK, your favourite drummer. Who would your favourite drummer be? Buddy Rich or whatever? Mm. Ringo Starr, probably. I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. I just want to spend the rest of my life doing that. Maybe a cigar on the side now and then.
Nice, thank
Beautiful.
You. So our next question is about this. So that's Emma Bunton there, whose new album limped into the charts this week at number 65. It's called Life in Mono. It sold 12,000 copies only. Who else needs to recognise that their career is over? Let's go. Let's start with Paul Morley this time. Paul.
Many of the questions tonight, the answer I want to give is take that. Constantly take that. And more specifically, Gary Barlow. And last night, when they came out on the X Factor final to do the thing with Leone, and that passionate speech he gave to Simon Cowell afterwards about that Simon Cowell had to... I mean, the idea that Gary Barlow was taking it so seriously, and he actually turned to Simon Cowell and implored him to make a really good record with Leone. And that whole idea that you know, at the moment of their triumph, they've come back, they've conned the whole nation. We've given in number one here, there, the other, maybe even the number one. That he should actually now decide that he possibly is going to lead us into the future. Mm. That he has that moment and he turns to Cowell and he actually says,
"I know what you mean. You wonder where this is going now."
I just want someone to actually point out, that's enough. Go away again.
Clear off. You say condemnation. The nation have been buying that. It's the nation's fault. They've been buying the music. They've been buying that single patience.
Yeah, because in a way, it's a Seagull effect, isn't it? Everybody tells us to such an extent that it's going to happen, that they're going to come back and it's going to be a success. Mm. People kind of believe it.
I think it's partly a success because it sounds like a Coldplay record. And that's what people like.
Patience does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it just sounds like an indie rock record.
It's soft rock.
It's right.
Well, that alone is another reason to say career over.
Yeah. All right, who else needs to recognise their career is over? Rod Little.
Well, following on from what Paul was saying, Leona. It's about time it finished, isn't it?
24 hours later, it's gone.
We do not want any more of that drivel, do we? And it's so anodyne.
Is that why we vote for it, do you think? Because ultimately it is the curse of obscurity. So what we're voting for is to wipe them off the planet.
We want them to be famous and then obscure again
But you show them the promised land and then they never get there.
It's the ultimate cruelty of the nation, isn't it? Yeah.
But at least it wasn't that Scouseroo one. But anyway.
Oh, yeah, that odd bloke.
It's really amazing, having worked in music theatre and sat through literally millions of hours of people auditioning, the worst music theatre performer is like in key and not flat, and there's people in the final of that are wrong. But I'd like to see Robbie Williams' career over.
Oh, yes.
Only because he came to one of my stand-up shows and he walked out after 20 minutes.
Why? Did you find out why?
Yeah, he told the woman on the way out that he thought that my voice would be better suited to meditational relaxation tapes. And then,
that's quite a funny comment.
I know it is, yeah. But I was relieved that he'd gone. Right?
Why not acknowledge as a comic that was witty?
No, it was. It's funny.
But why should he end his career then?
Well, because I was kind of relieved that he went though, because when I saw him up there, I was thinking, oh, what if he comes backstage? I'll have to think of something positive to say to him. And I did manage to think of something.
What would it have been?
What it was that in 1997, he was at Glastonbury, and a load of us thought, oh, let's go and see Robbie Williams. It'd be awful. Mm. But actually, it was all right. But
that's the worst thing that happens.
No more than all right. It was just all right. That was your. Yeah.
That's why we decided.
Can Stuart have one of my points for suggesting Robbie?
Yeah, we'll transfer one. Right, John Oliver, whose career should be over?
I think Tupac Shakur needs to recognise that he's been dead for nearly a decade. Apparently, he's about to guest vocal on someone's album here, and. The dead rock star phenomenon now is tantamount to grave robbing what they are doing to people's work which they never intended to be heard. I'm not au fait with Mr. Shakur or indeed much of his work, but he speaks very highly of you.
He loves kind of wry English satire. From beyond the grave, he loves it. He loves it from beyond the grave.
So it's true what they said. He was full of surprises.
Yeah, he was.
Right, let's have a look at the scores. We're very near the end of the show. At the moment, in last place is Stuart Lee on 32, followed by Paul Morley, 33, Rod Little, 34, and out in the lead, joining us from New York, The Daily Show's John Oliver. It is time now for the final topic. It's where it can all change. It's the and finally round. And this is the round where you tell us what's raised your passions this week. Who should I start with? I think I'll start with John Oliver this time. John.
Oh, this is really for Stuart. There's a CD over here of a musical called Diana the Musical. And it was written by a school teacher and she staged it. And it really is absolutely incredible. It happened quite a long time ago. So it ends with the divorce rather than the death. But if you don't want to go and see something that involves song titles such as Everything Happens at Buckingham Palace with an American Diana, because, you know, she was a pretty lady, so, I mean, she must have been American. And it involves this line in the middle of a song spoken by Prince Charles when he exclaims, Diana, I cannot abide your incessant depression. And that, for me, is a night out at the theatre.
Thank you. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. Stuart Lee.
Actually, while you're on the subject of bad lyrics, John, the musical Rent, which was an enormous hit, actually includes the line, my body has become a home to the acquired immunity deficiency syndrome. Genuine line.
That's
music.
A wonderful
line. I know. Music theatre is the worst form of art that exists. My thing that's annoying me at the moment is people that never go to church ever suddenly complaining about the secularisation of Christmas.
Yeah.
And also, people suddenly complaining about the commercialisation of Christmas But we live in a capitalist society, and this is the kind of year when people try and sell you loads of stuff. So let's either have a Christian socialist revolution internationally, or stop complaining about the commercialisation of Christmas and its secularisation.
There is a lower form of art, the musical theatre, and that's radio ads. Rod Little.
I've got to say, it was a report from the National Audit Office. Now, normally a report from the National Audit Office, you just go away, curl up and die because it's so boring. But this one made the very valid point, empirically, that management consultants are absolutely bloody useless. They have achieved absolutely nothing. We spend £3 billion a year on these people, and it has been found by the NAO that they have given us no benefit for that money whatsoever. And people listening to this will probably have met management consultants.
I'm sure.
And we all know they're parasites and appalling. So just wonderful. And we could stop them all now. Close them down. Close down Accenture. Close down Logica. Get rid of the lot.
It's a lovely idea.
It is a nice idea.
It is. You can have two. Paul Morley.
Moments after the end of X Factor, Simon Cowell was there beginning to trail Britain's Got Talent. The thing that out in America has been huge. I don't know who presents it over there. I think it's Regis.
It's Regis Philbin.
And I think over here it's between Robbie Williams, Tony Blair and Jane McDonald to present this particular series. But the fact that as soon as he's got all his potential cash for Leona, he's already wanted to get more potential cash from us.
Of course. Yes. OK, we're at the end of the show. We're going to be very quick here. Here's the scores at the moment. The final scores. In last place, Stuart Lee on 34, followed by Paul Morley, 36. So our two winners at the moment are Rod Little on 37. You don't want it, do you? And John Oliver on 40.
That's why I gave him a point earlier.
So that means that John Oliver... Hang on, I'm going to be quick. John Oliver and Rod Little are slugging it out in our head-to-head, and this is where they defend the indefensible. It's the point of the show where you have to defend an unpalatable proposition. You must argue with gusto and conviction. You've got 20 seconds to fill. Rod, you're going to go first. Are you ready?
Yep.
What are you having it?
All right.
We should continue to pay for Diana inquiries until we uncover a conspiracy theory.
The Diana inquiries, we've got a lot of unemployment around at the moment. There's lots of Polish people taking all the jobs up at the moment. What can fill this gap is more and more inquiries into who killed Diana, what she was doing, whether the royal family were aliens. It will keep us all happy for months, and it would fill a hole in the national psyche which was taken when she was robbed, taken away from us.
OK, that's excellent. John Oliver, you may not be familiar with this story, but a Liberal Democrat MP has been caught bedding one of the cheeky girls. Here's your proposition. We should clone the cheeky girls so that every MP can have one.
Well, I think let's first have a moment of quiet contemplation for if that truly is the case, that an MP has slept with the chief of girls, then my hope for democracy has just died in the gutter like a fairground fish. Is that honestly true?
Yeah, it is. Lembit Open from the Lib Dems.
No, not him.
Him!
I'm sorry, I'm not getting involved in a silly game when something that depressing has happened.
You won't be able to come home, John. The whole society has changed.
That's really sad.
Listen, do you know what? I'm declaring the winner because of his passion there. Rod Little. Rod, ladies and gentlemen, the winner.
Just a minute on crack, this.
It is a little bit. I think we should, if we had a poster, I'd put that on there. Thank you very much to Stuart Lee, John Oliver, Paul Morley and Rod Little. No Christmas off for us. We're back next Sunday with a Christmas Eve Any Other Business, where my guest will be a former spin doctor, the editor of a national newspaper, a former editor of a national newspaper and a top comic. That's it. This has been a World's End production for 5Live.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find out about other BBC podcasts, including The Ashes Close of Play, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live